we get this party started. In terms of for the short-term rental implementation work group, just to memorialize, looks like we have all members present except for Bill Brannigan and John Rogers and Jamie Michelle. John and Jamie both indicated that this could be difficult. Jamie's been ill and John's dealing with some family matters. I'm not sure what's up with Bill Brannigan.
There we got five name tags over there.
That's because I left Spencer and I forgot ours.
Oh, okay.
We're so well known.
Right, yeah. We got your number.
Yeah, we can grab them and it's helpful, so.
It looks like everybody else is here. So we had, I guess, first up, public comment. Doesn't look like we have anybody here for that. Approval of the minutes from the April 27th meeting. Would entertain a motion to approve minutes.
So moved.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? None. Minutes are adopted.
I'm trying to remember, are Dietmar and I members and not liaisons so we can vote?
Yeah, you guys are members actually of this work.
Yeah, we're members of the committee. And I'm actually a member as well.
He is, and Sandy is, so we have a quorum by, I mentioned to Spencer, it's like, you gotta be at this one.
Spencer's not a member.
I am.
He is on this particular work group.
Yeah, I get to vote for a change.
Okay, this is kind of a different one. Just making sure.
Okay, so next up we have update on licensed short-term rentals cap and waitlist.
Which one are you going to?
This, I'm not gonna go on that. For the big screen, I'm gonna just use this for the code stuff with the markup so I can make changes as we go along if there's any changes you guys want to see made to it. But so I'm going to the memo that had update on licensed short-term rental caps and waitlist.
Okay.
You wanna go ahead and bring that up if you're looking at it on your computers?
Got it.
Okay, so right now we've got 193 licensed short-term rentals inside the city limits. We're in the renewal period that extends from July 1st through August 15th. So existing licensed operators are working through their renewal paperwork as we speak. So of the 193, 149 are vacation rental dwellings inside the permissible area overlay. 36 are vacation rentals outside the overlay. And eight of them are either B&Bs or home shares. That'd be two B&Bs, as I recall, and six home shares. We have all the details attached in terms of the units we're referring to as well. And we do have a group of formerly licensed vacation rental properties that are inside the overlay that have to that count against the cap number until they've been discontinued for a full 12 months. That's that non-conforming status we've discussed in the past. We still have seven folks off the wait list. We have six who completed the licensing process, seven who are still working through it, and 10 licenses will be carried forward to the next window, which is coming up August 15th of 2022. We presently have 78 properties on the wait list, so it's about a 3 to 4 year wait is what we're telling people when they sign up. A question had come up previously about, well, what kind of change do we have from the numbers of licensed units outside the overlay, because they go away when somebody chooses to stop using them, so they discontinue their license or they sell their property. That was 45 in November of 2019. It's 36 now. So,
and as Sonia Loves pointed out last month, mm-hmm. that major change happened right at the very beginning. It has slowed up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. There was two since our last meeting, from 38 to 36. But you're right, it has slowed up quite a bit since the early part of that.
Do you know why?
You know, there have been a number of different reasons. Some folks have chosen not to use their units for short-term rental purposes. I think some chose not to do it under the new program because they didn't want to do it under the new program. There have been some that were people who had testified to the council at the time we were doing the change in 2019 that hey, look, we just want to use this for short-term rental purposes until we can move out because we're retiring out to the coast, and this is our way of being able to secure a home that we want before we come out. There've been a few of those where that actually played out as they testified. And some have changed ownership, which is your normal course with some of these homes, that they're going to be sold and somebody else is going to buy them. The buyer can't use them for short-term rental purposes. They're buying it for either their principal residence or a seasonal home, one of the two. So, yeah, the mix with B&Bs and home shares is about the same, and we really still have not seen a big, you know, when we were doing that code work, home shares were becoming kind of a thing, but we really just haven't seen it. You know, it's been pretty steady, I think. You know, we may have started out with two or three and we're up to six. That's not a really big change. And again, B&Bs and home shares are allowed everywhere in the city, subject to a license. So any other thoughts on the stats, so to speak?
Well, I do have a question on the wait list. I did not go by and directly check out the addresses, but are any of those new homes in Nye Beach on the main street, those new little cottages?
Oh, the one that's block built?
By Inn at Nye Beach, are
not
those
on
the vacation wait list because
Mm-mm.
someone thought they were?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I didn't think so.
They're not, and they, frankly, they, yeah, that's, they're not on there. And that would be a very difficult thing for them to do if they got on the wait list.
They're all just at market rental, right?
Mm-hmm. They're rentals, they're market rentals.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, it's just not set up for that, given the parking arrangement as well.
I will tell this person it's not happening. Thank you.
Is there, I just need to. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so need to. Any other questions on that item?
I think so.
Enforcement. Brent, Jim, I'll just turn it over to you guys.
So go ahead, Jim.
Okay.
I'll lead off.
As you can see, there's only been 7 complaints that have been registered, pretty much run-of-the-mill stuff. There's nothing that stands out. One cease and desist letter from that just got sent out. So they have 15 days. So it's coming up on the 15th day, so we'll take a look at it. They will probably more than likely have their ad taken down. And the status of Heinz Neff citation, we're still waiting. Have not heard back from Don whether they've made any contact to set up a date. Last we heard, Mr. Neff was still dealing with some health issues, so we're in a holding pattern on them. Hopefully we'll see something soon.
And I just have an update that Chief wanted me to pass on regarding the new CSO that was funded by council for budget year. It is not advertised yet. We made the request in June 28th. I guess HR has multiple recruitments going on, but it should be posted pretty soon, hopefully. It's 20 hours per week with the CSO focus on the STR complaints, investigations, and compliance. Position will also be trained to assist with nuisance violations and required to work at a minimum on Saturday and Sunday. We're probably looking at either Friday or Monday being the flop day. So they'll for sure work Saturday and Sunday, and whether it's Friday or Monday yet, it's not completely decided. But with the amount of time it takes for the hiring process, and then once we select somebody in the background process, it's probably going to be September before they would be fully hired, and then another probably 3 weeks with Jim to get caught up to speed. Any questions on that? That's all I have to pass on.
So that third position will just be for handling short-term rentals and nuisance problems?
Yes. Right.
Which there plenty of nuisances, it seems, right? So they'll.
I think there's gonna be plenty of work, yeah.
Plenty of work, okay, that's my question.
For sure.
With at least, with them covering at least one of the weekend days.
Yeah, so they're gonna for sure work Saturday and Sunday, and then it's either gonna be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Got it. Pass along to the planning commission.
But why are there so many complaints out at 73rd Court? That seems to be a repetitive.
Well, the parking complaint, the two parking complaints, one is just a repeat. The complainant just called the day after, or went online the day after and said, you know, vehicles are still here. And we did get one trash complaint, trash can being left out, they said for 3 days after pickup. They, on my investigation, which is still open, the complainant was only able to send me one picture, and when I requested additional pictures for other days, they sent me the exact same picture, so it, I can prove they had it out one day, but I can't, because it didn't have a timestamp on it, I can't find out which day that picture was taken. So, yeah, there is an issue up at 73rd Court with several of the neighbors do not like the fact that there is a short-term rental there, and they have voiced opposition, and they've called in some complaints that were not STR-related that we've dealt with that were, I would say were probably pretty menial. And in talking to the neighbors, they say, you know what, we just don't want that short-term rental here. So, yeah, it's kind of weeding between what's just anger and what is an actual complaint. But, yeah, we see complaints up there quite a bit, and it's figuring out what is valid and what isn't.
Thank you.
Anything else on this one, on enforcement?
Nope.
Moving right along. Okay, scope of the short-term rental ordinance implementation work group's final report. At the last meeting, we kind of went through some topic areas for some refinements to the short-term rental ordinance, and I've worked those into code, which I have to run through with you. Also, I kind of worked this into just trying to get some clarity as to what your expectations are for a final report. Whether it's, okay, this set of refinements is kind of the final report, or if there's another set of findings that you want to make or refer up to the full council so that we can kind of at least pencil those out in draft form for your review at your September meeting. So that's kind of what I'm trying to accomplish under this agenda item. So I thought I'd first run through the code changes, and I included those in highlight through here. So I'll go to the first one. Yeah, I opened up 4.25. 4.25 and 14.25, those two chapters in the municipal code cover short-term rentals. The difference is 4.25 is procedural licensing stuff that really only has to go to the council if it's to be amended. 14 has to go to the planning commission because it's got land use provisions in it. So that would go to the planning commission with recommendation to the council. So I'll go to the first one. Okay, so the first one was this grace period language. It should show up in highlight in your packet. It's not showing up in highlight here, that's okay. That's probably because I'm not showing it in full markup. Here we go. So we had talked about, you know, there's a limited number of circumstances where, you know, if you own a licensed vacation rental in a commercial zone or immediately adjacent to a commercial zone, you can sell it and the buyer can immediately assume that and start operating it as a vacation rental. The reason for that was, as we went through that process, was there was a recognition that tourist commercial areas had historically and have always had for many, 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 many years, vacation rentals. We've got condominium motels that were designed explicitly for that purpose in Night Beach, for example, that have vacation rentals. And so when this was adopted in 2019, this was the accommodation that said, hey, look, in these tourist commercial areas, C2, for example, in Night Beach, but also the water-related, such as the Embarcadero down on the bayfront, there's an expectation that you're going to have short-term tenancies here. They should be able to sell their units for that purpose. That's kind of historically kind of part and parcel with the fabric of these areas. As opposed to, say, the residential areas that are within the permissible boundary where, you know, if somebody has a vacation rental, they sell that house, the buyer wants to use it for vacation rental, they go on the end of the wait list. Principle there being in those residential areas, once a vacation rental, not always a vacation rental. So in these tourist commercial areas, we had been dealing with the situation where, hey, I just bought it, I've got the next 4 to 6 weekends booked already through Airbnb with people who've reserved the use of this vacation rental. Can I operate it as a vacation rental before I have a license? And what we had been telling people is, no, you got to have a license. What they actually did, I can't say. But this grace period basically says, and we talked about it being 30-day grace period, which is, okay, as long as you come in within 30 days to apply for your license, you can maintain continuity of rental for that unit and the people who have reserved that unit. And you're good until you work through the licensing process. That's what that says. Any thoughts there? Are we good there?
Mm-hmm. Looks good. I think we talked it over enough.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to belabor it either. Yeah. Wait list. The original ordinance basically, you know, says, hey, we were to start a waiting list. It's actually framed as waiting list. Once we hit the license cap, and we hit the license cap within a few months of when the actual ordinance was adopted in 2019, and so we've been operating with kind of internal administrative procedures up to this point. And what this does is it memorializes that. And so, well, that's what I put in here, the process for how we handle the waiting list. The big piece here is we work through the waiting list once a year. And we do that essentially at the close of your license renewal period when we know how many licenses we're going to have available from those who didn't renew. You know, people take, it runs a gamut in terms of people, you know, on the wait list and how quickly they move through that and actually license up, but they are given a full 12 months. Some take that full 12 months because they often will say have an existing tenant in their unit and they've got to work with that tenant to transition them out. They may have or often have some changes that they want to make either for their own purposes to the unit to make it more attractive for vacation rental purposes or to meet our life safety rules, such as swapping out windows or things of that nature for a proper fire egress. And that can take some time. Actually, right now, it seems that it takes a lot of time because of just some of the availability of some of these items. And so, you know, those individuals, some of the individuals on the wait list, they went on the wait list knowing that they may not be eligible when they pop up. And the most significant standard there has to do with the spacing standard, which is no more than one building per street segment can be used for vacation rental purposes at any given time. And so with those, it's we contact them to see, okay, you're up. There's still another vacation rental on your street segment, which means you're not eligible. Do you want to stay on the wait list? Or you do have the right, although nobody's done it yet, to apply to the Planning Commission for relief from that spacing standard if you think it's inappropriate. That goes through a conditional use permit process, public hearing with the Planning Commission. Nobody's done that yet. So generally what they end up doing is, what they'll say is, please just keep me on the wait list, and the next time it comes up, maybe I'll be eligible. That spacing standard won't be a problem.
Hey, Derek?
Yeah.
Do they, if they're saying you're not eligible now because of spacing standards, do they get to the bottom of the list?
No, they stay at the same spot.
They stay at the top?
Mm-hmm. Now, if they pursue the conditional use permit and lose, they go to the bottom. So if they said, hey, I'm gonna try to get a conditional use permit from the planning commission and get the planning commission to say, I don't have to meet the spacing standard, and the planning commission denies that.
And they go to the bottom?
Then they would go to the bottom. Let's see. They have 60 days to either apply for the license, if they say they're gonna apply for a license, or apply for a conditional use permit if they say they're gonna apply for a conditional use permit. I did chat with the planning commission about this at their work session on Monday, and they thought it would be good to say, add some language here that says 60 days, you know, from the date they receive written notice, so that there's, you know, a clock ticking, so to speak. And that's about it. I think we've covered most of it there. Just, you know, in terms of the filing deadline, August 15th. Any other thoughts or comments on the waitlist? Okay.
Hey, Derek, just again.
Yeah.
On D. Playing the.
On D?
Yeah, when that comes into play.
For properties that cannot satisfy spacing?
Right.
Okay, we contact them. So when we do our annual exercise of going through the waitlist, we know we have, I think the last 2 years we've had 23 each year licenses available. So we work down in chronological order based on whoever's
right.
been on it the longest and contact them. And if when we contact them, we have already checked the spacing standard.
Right.
So when we hit that first one that has a spacing standard issue, we contact them, let them know, hey, you've come up on the wait list. We have a license available. However, you know, you can't meet the spacing standard right now because there's another unit on that street segment. You have the option of applying for a conditional use permit to try to get relief from that, but understand, and then we go through what's involved with that. Or you can simply indicate that you want to stay on the wait list if you want to stay on the wait list. And you would stay in your same spot.
Right. So you don't lose.
You don't lose where you're at.
But the conditional use permit, who can actually apply, or what's the basis for granting a conditional use permit for the spacing requirements?
There's no special standard for spacing. It runs it through your typical conditional use permits. What the Planning Commission would have to do is look at the purpose and intent of the regulations and the other conditional use criteria and determine, you know, is relief warranted. They could, for example, say it was a super long street segment.
Okay.
Compared to others, that might be a circumstance where the Planning Commission could say, hey, look, this street segment is so long, we've got 40 dwellings on it because it's a super block. You know, as compared to some of these other areas,
right.
It's similar spacing. It's, you know, so that would be a reason for that, if you want, looking for one. But that's one where notice would go out to surrounding property owners. People would have a chance to attend the public hearing, provide their testimony. And then the Planning Commission would render a decision. So,
okay.
Right. Just a renumber on there's one more unit, I thought. Thought we had one more.
Should be in violations, right?
Yeah, I thought I did something with D, a new D in violation. Oh, here it is. I'm almost blurred by it. Sorry. We had talked about adding a provision in here that basically said, look, if you have another civil infraction on your property where you're operating in short-term rental, that counts as a strike against a short-term rental. And you had asked for that type of language, and that's what I put in here.
And what would that type of violation be, a civil violation?
So I'm guessing by what we're looking at, anything that's a nuisance violation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Nuisance violations, we can cite up to $1,000. If it's just under the short-term rental, it's a $500 fine. So I mean, I'm kind of on the fence as to whether we should be including things like overgrown vegetation involved in that. I know we do have some circumstances where we have issues with nuisance properties where we've gone out for several calls, be they a disturbance. Once we build up like a history being in a certain property, then that gives us a little bit of a little more teeth to act. I don't know if do we want to spell out what nuisance violations would that we would consider, or you just want to leave it any nuisance violation would be considered a strike?
That's where I'd go with it. I think you have a hard time justifying kind of splitting that up. I mean, other examples would be unpermitted construction. That would that get throw it in there. We've had that come up before.
But would that be more under a land use?
Still goes civil infraction.
Okay.
If it's a violation, that's it's a civil infraction.
Yeah.
It could.
How does that enforce? You, I mean, how would Jim know that it was an unlicensed construction?
We'd communicate internally.
And we've done that on occasions where we've had.
You know, their office is involved with the enforcement of the zoning code too. I mean, what we do is determine if there is an infraction.
Yeah.
And we frame what the nature of the infraction is, but pursuit of the civil infraction, sending of the citation, municipal court stuff, that's all handled by the CSO. So we're already coordinating on that. Illegal dwelling in a structure that's not the short-term rental, that would be another one that would trigger this. Trash, undue trash, which gets into nuisance, could trigger this. So there are a few areas where that could come up, or it has come up. But the premise here, or at least the policy rationale that to support a provision such as this would be that, hey, look, you have a license to operate vacation rental in the city of Newport. You have an obligation to comply with all of the city's rules if you're going to operate a vacation rental in the city of Newport, not just those that are specific to the unit itself.
Is there a possibility that a person could construct within the city without a license?
You mean construct a what? What do you
permit thinking? Or a shed or something like that?
Sure, we run into all kinds of that from time to time. They could put a deck on a short-term rental without a permit. They could construct a shed. They could do renovations.
Right?
Yeah. Some of those changes could actually get pretty close to the short-term rental rules too, or violate a short-term rental rule. I can think of one pre-ordinance where they took the parking in their garage and turned it into a playroom for their short-term rental. And some of that work actually required a permit, I believe, that wasn't obtained. So you can run into, there are lots of flavors to this.
That happened in Nye Beach, did it?
That one was not in Nye Beach.
Hey, Derek, I've got to step out for about 3 minutes.
Okay.
And since I have the quorum, you don't vote while I'm gone.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll miss you, Spencer.
I'll be back. I got to do something with the agenda here that Melanie can finish up.
So what are you guys' thoughts on that? Is that something, does that look appropriate to you? Is that something you want to go with? Or?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think it's time to take it up to the city council level.
With that provision? Okay. I think that's the last of the 4.25, so I'm going to pop over to 14.25, and there was only one change there.
What did you say about 14.25? That had to go to the Planning Commission?
This will have to go to Planning Commission because it's land use rule.
Okay.
So this will have to go to them. And like I said, I talked to him on Monday, since I had a work session, could fit this in along with that. I also talked to him a little bit about camping, because camping's gonna end up having to go to them too, because there's some cross-references in chapter 14 that tie over. They were generally supportive of this change. We have at least one planning commissioner who may just write a letter relative to the phase-out of units outside of the overlay. But that was discussed as well. One of the questions they had was, what if they want to initiate some revisions to the short-term rental code? And I suggested they wait until your process is concluded before they try to do something like that. And see kind of where the recommendations from the short-term rental work group go and how the council handles that. I did explain to them process-wise, the way this would work is you have both the planning commission and council who can initiate changes to land use regulations. Because the council set up a short-term rental work group to provide recommendations for refinements, the way I would see this working is this gets brought to the council reviews the recommendations from this work group, and if the council wants to move forward with revisions, it would then initiate the process and refer to the planning commission to start the public hearings process on the chapter 14 stuff. So what this did is this gets rid of the relief valve provision that was in the code, which said, you know, you could by resolution increase the number of permissible vacation rental licenses in the overlay from 176, which you set by resolution, or the council set by resolution when they adopted this ordinance, to up to 200. And anything over 200, the way the existing code reads, you'd have to amend the ordinance to do it. And what you guys had asked was get rid of the 200, mm-hmm. just put 176 in there. And if that's to be changed in the future, it's going to have to be an ordinance change, and it goes through planning commission and council.
Yeah. Anything about 176 as an ordinance change now? Is that what you're saying?
With this revision, correct. Whereas under the current rules, you could add 24 licenses through a resolution, up to 24.
And this would change it, but it'll go to council to change?
Yes, this has to go to planning commission and council because it's in the chapter 14 stuff.
So we're amending the present ordinance? How we're doing that?
That's what you'd be doing. You'd be amending ordinance 2144, which is what was the one in 2019.
Okay. Because right now, council could say we want to up that number to 185. That would just be done by resolution of the council. With the number fixed in here at 176, to change that has to go through the land use, you know, the planning commission and the city council.
Yeah, which means effectively any change to the 176, you're looking at two hearings and a recommendation from the council,
right.
Or from the planning commission that you would have to have, which they would either say, well, they'll say they agree with it or not. So.
Well, I still like it. I mean, I like this. Recommendation.
You like the float or you like a hard number?
I like the hard number, the 176.
Yeah. Nice number, 176. It kind of flows.
Yeah, really attractive number.
Yeah, I have a hunch. Yeah, even with these changes, I have a hunch that Newport, like, you know, that we'll be dealing with, like many jurisdictions, short-term rental issues every few years anyway.
Right.
In some flavor, right. Because of the nature of what's going on.
Exactly.
Who knows, they'll come up with some sort of temporary lodging twist that we never thought about. I know. Well.
So what's the next move then is to send it to council and planning commission?
Yep. Well, no, yeah, to council, and then the council would determine if they want to, with a majority vote, initiate the legislative process, and then it goes to planning commission.
Okay.
And public hearings. And, you know, and expect on this one, you're going to hear pro and con going through on that one.
It's
much like you guys did the last time. I don't know that these are more refinements, so I can't imagine the process being anywhere near as challenging as the last one. But on this issue, given we have a wait list, it's 3 to 4 years long. Don't be surprised if some people come in and gripe at you about that.
Yeah, they would want to increase it to 250, right?
Good, it's hard to say, but you also have people saying go, go, go at 176. I mean, that's just the nature of the of the issue.
No, I understand.
Sounds like you're comfortable with this package of changes. Are any others that we need to talk about at this point in time, or is this kind of reasonably cover what we discussed?
I think it's good. Before we move on to the next one, I'd just like to bring up something that I brought up before, and I'll be talking about it with Spencer next week. The lack of a stop sign at 15th and Ocean View. There are still mainly folks from the short-term rentals who don't have a clue about where they're going the wrong way up the one-way street. So I am really looking forward to getting that traffic issue settled in some way that's safe for the neighborhood and for the Oregon Coast bike route, which goes right on that road.
Actually, Cindy Linda got broadsided by a motorcycle coming up 15th on the one way. She was just going through the 15th center section and smacked right in the side of her. Yeah.
Well,
so that's a, yeah, that's a fairly dangerous intersection. I know we've talked about that a lot.
And I wanted to ask Derek if you could again send a refreshment letter to the owners of the short-term rentals there so that they can remind their renters to exit on Spring Street. That is really the most sensible one to take, I think. But we can certainly discuss it. I just want to mention that it is a continuing problem. But, you know, I'm really happy that the short-term rental situation has settled down from the first year. I feel you've done a good job, and
well, thank you.
We've got some ordinances in place, and I think that's good. But this 15th Street is still a problem for the people who are new in town continually, and there's at least 10 vacation rentals down there.
Yeah, and how do you know they're vacation rentals? Just from assuming, or
because there's a guy who's retired and disabled, and he sits in the corner with and he watches everything that goes on. That's kind of how I know. He knows who is who. Now he doesn't. He won't take pictures of cars or license plates, but.
I think we need to deputize him.
Brent, you guys. So, did Mar understand that was an accident at that intersection?
Melinda had an accident at the intersection. There's been accidents at that intersection before, yeah.
Yeah.
But the people come right up 15th, they don't see the one way.
Right. No, I hear you. But was that a recent one, Dimar?
About a year ago.
Yeah. That's pretty recent, yeah. I don't think we've had any deaths at that corner that I know of in the time I've been living around that neighborhood, but I would like to avoid that.
The other nice thing that would do it would slow me down before I get to the speed sign at the curb there. Mm-hmm. But that usually flashes slow down for me, you know. That,
shame on that
one right before the curbs.
It's flashing, Dietmar. You're going too fast.
Too fast.
So what's the license plate on your car again?
By the time I get there from the stop sign, I might not be going fast enough. Yeah.
Okay. The only other thing we had on the agenda has to do with the, there's a contract or personal service agreement, I guess it's proper for me, on the council's agenda for Monday for lodging revs. That was a 3-year authorization when we originally got in 2019, and so the personal service agreement would extend that for another 3 years at the same rates. So I would note, we had, I believe, the cease and desist order that you just issued was the High Street one, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a complaint come in on that one that somebody was advertising it and somebody had caught it on Airbnb, and Jim had already received that notification from Lodging Revs and had issued a cease and desist letter, which I was then able to convey back to the complainant in this case.
What do you think Lodging Revs has done, Jim?
I think they've done a good job. I mean, occasionally, I don't know who does... how often they check the listings. I mean, every once in a while, I may find one on my own that they have not reported yet. They've done a good job, especially as far as complaints that are coming in. They do a good job cataloging it and giving us contact information when available, and so we get a timely response out of the emergency contact. I think they've been doing a good job.
Are they contacting the agent for the
They're contacting the emergency contact that is listed for the address. And then they'll add notes into lodging revs as far as whether they made contact, who they contacted, pass the information on to. Other than that, they do not do follow-up after that. That's for up to me, or that's up to me to do.
But the owner is also getting notification.
I do not know if the owner is getting notification.
Or the agent or the emergency.
Yeah, so the emergency contact is the one that lodging revs will try and get a hold of.
Yeah, so any complaint that comes in on any place, it's going to contact whoever they've recorded as their.
Correct. Now, if it comes in on an online, if they submit an online, it comes direct to me. They don't filter that out and try and make contact with an emergency contact. Most of the online stuff is stuff that we cannot or wouldn't take care of right away. It's not an emergency. Most of the stuff that comes in on the hotline is, I can't get into the unit, or water line broke or something like that. And lodging revs documents, like I said, they'll add all the notes in. And if they have a recording of the call, they'll also include that, attach it to the complaint, so that we can go back through and listen.
Yeah, I haven't heard any issues from folks who had trouble with the 24/7 hotline since we made some adjustments.
Exactly.
A while ago with respect to the script.
Yeah.
And they made some structure issues there. And I haven't heard any concerns about the online form since we implemented the auto response stuff, because that's what folks were looking for. Hey, I didn't remember the concerns people raised, or I'd log a comment, I wouldn't know if it was received by anything or just went into the ethereal. We haven't had any of those come up since we implemented that.
Exactly.
And if I read your report right, Derek, Lodging Revs is keeping their monthly fees the same.
Correct.
For 3 years.
Yeah, and it's GovOS now.
Yeah.
The council will see the merger document. So it was just a merger that happened January of this year.
Okay.
How much are we paying Lodging Revs, Spencer?
$1,400 a month.
I'm looking at page 9 on that personal services agreement.
Yeah.
Do we need everything on there? Is everything that we're paying for, is that being used?
On the agreement? Are you looking at the exhibit?
Yes, exhibit A. It's the online bilingual complaint form and call center and business hours. Okay, and then we pay extra for the...
The only one we haven't fully implemented yet, but... And that really gets at where, Steve, you guys are on the remittances. We have the capability of auditing, and so we have that functionality built into it. But until we automate the payment system, we have nothing to audit against but the hand collections that finance is doing. So that's, I mean, we could potentially ask them to carve that out, but then we would turn around and be adding it in once they finish up their relationship with the State Department of Revenue and get that automatic collection fulfilling.
Is that very long off, or what?
Well, it's coming, so I have to.
Yeah. They're very, very short-handed in finance right now, so it's going to be a little while yet, so.
So we should keep paying the $450 a month, which in this overall scheme of things, it's not much, but is it easier to just keep it than to institute it?
I think it probably is, because we do want to get to that point.
Right.
And
Steve.
We have to sort out a number of staffing issues in finance before we have the capability of really moving forward on a decision.
It sounds like we need to change the ordinance first before we could actually...
There's a bunch of stuff we have to do if we end up going with the state, and we haven't even had a chance to really digest that, what has to be done to get a report to the council, and seeing if the council wants us to move in that direction. So
that's the money flows through the county right now?
What's that?
The money flows through the county right
now?
No,
the money flows directly to us.
Oh,
from the vacation rental. So we send out a statement to every vacation rental owner. They fill it out with their activity, and then the checks come to the city of Newport.
That's not the same for hotels, is it?
And for hotels as well.
Is it the same for hotels?
And for the, what would happen under the state collection is they would, and everyone has to file the same sorts of forms with the state of Oregon. So they have to do two, they have to do a city form and a state form. Under the state collection, they could do it with one form. The state would collect the money and then they would, they would turn over our share to us, minus whatever the, you know, the cost per collection.
And there would be, and there would be some accounting that goes with that, showing why the number they're remitting to us is the number they're remitting to us, presumably. That we would then be able to use and compare against using these audit tools with lodging rev. Okay, we got X dollars off this particular unit, however, that, you know, that unit appears to have been rented twice as much. It'd be kind of a red flag kind of thing.
It's not a perfect audit.
It's not a perfect audit, but would be kind of a, this one looks good, green, 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 yellow, this one might be problematic, red, this clearly looks problematic. Think of it that way.
Yeah, but the other problem is even with this audit tool, you know, right now, if you're paying through
Airbnb, yeah.
Airbnb, or one of those tools, Airbnb is just submitting a check for the city of Newport, and they aren't required to break it down into individual units. So I don't know how you bridge that issue with this audit function.
Well, that's one where we may want to have a good conversation with the state, because I thought the State Department of Revenue was going to break through that barrier with Airbnb.
I know they were trying to do that. I don't know if they ever did or not.
Yeah, they were trying, but the last I heard is that they haven't been successful yet.
Well, if anybody's going to get through it, it's going to be a state agency.
Right.
You know, they've got resources.
But I guess just thinking about that, you know, maybe we should, because I'm not sure what we're going to get from the $450 a month, even when we're doing that. It might be good for us to have a discussion with them before we include that.
Is the end result we get increased revenue with going through the state, or?
What's that?
Do we get increased revenue going through the state, or do they take a cut and we drop revenue?
No, they take a cut for the administrative functions.
Yeah, but
of doing
then
it.
We lose revenue then?
Yeah, so we would get the revenues minus the administrative fee.
What I'm saying is that are we having some outstanding debts right now that aren't being collected? That would possibly be collected by the state. Are we increasing? If we go with the state, is it more likely they're going to pay their bill as opposed
to don't know.
The city?
You know, we don't know how active the state's going to be, particularly with the smaller vacation rentals, of trying to track those down if they aren't getting.
And why are we considering that, just because we don't want to do it anymore, or what?
Well, I think from a staffing standpoint, it's hard for us to do a, you know, complete job on this that folks are asking us to do with this current staffing that we have even when we're fully staffed. And so the question is whether or not the state has a more thorough way to assure collections and assure things are getting audited properly. And we haven't had time, you know, with the vacancy of the finance director's position and budget and everything else, we have not had time to sit down and have a discussion with the state on that.
I'm just reluctant in a way. I'm kind of reluctant because the state takes such a high cut. I mean, on the marijuana tax, we get very little money from that, you know.
Well, we get our local, they collect our local, see, the state collects our local marijuana tax. We don't get much state money anymore, but you know, there's a cost for collection that comes off the top of that. And they also collect our gas tax. So our local gas tax gets returned to us from the state.
I just know that bags of money are heading to the what? To
right.
Salem every
yeah,
day.
It's not free for the state to do it. So
we had started at 1600, and there was another service that we had from lodging revs that we dropped a few months after the original contract. So we have a termination without cause provision in there, which means we could at any point in time say we no longer want the audit remittance tool, and that 450 goes away. I wonder if we shouldn't have this as a reporting item for the next STR meeting in terms
probably,
of how
yeah.
we want to tackle it.
I think timing wise, I think now that, of course, now Steve's into audit, you know, and
September would be a reasonable time.
My feeling on that is if we collect $600 on 450, we make $150.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the audit cost is 400 and we don't collect, only collect 300, then, but if we can spend that $400 and get some additional money, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't spend it.
Yeah, so I think Derek's idea is a good idea. We'll plan to have a report for this group on both state collection of the money, and we'll have a discussion with lodging revs on the audit component to really understand what that would do for us.
I think if people know they're getting audited, it would be there, I think they'd become a little more honest.
Well, and audits, it's kind of a loose term as they use it. They're basically looking at the, what their assumptions are is if a property is, you know, advertising this much, they're determining that it should be generating this much revenue based on the data that they're collecting is how I think they do it. So it's an estimate.
Right.
Of what they, and what's nice about it is at least there's an estimate that we can compare what we're receiving, except we have the problem of so many of these bookings are going through third-party agents that are only reporting.
Lump sum.
And paying lump sum to the city, so it's hard for us to determine which vacation rentals, you know, that those funds were generated from, so.
Yeah, like I say, Airbnb, that's so.
There's another nice aspect of the auditing too, is because we have heard from a number of constituents who say, who want to see these numbers audited and believe that if they're audited, there may be funds out there the cities should be collecting that it's not currently collecting. And so it begins to answer that question that comes up periodically where people are saying, hey, there's money potentially out there, you might not be, you don't know, because you're not auditing, you know? There may be some stuff out there you're missing.
No, it's a reasonable question to ask, and it's a reasonable thing for us to do, but let's plan on doing a report for this group at the September meeting.
Before we wrap up, I just wanted to double back, because I just want to make sure I'm preparing appropriately for September. September, per the resolution the council put together, would be your, when you make your recommendation to the council, full council, the work group does. And I expect Jamie and John and Bill will be back at the table in some form for that too, and I just want to make sure, is it code changes? And, or there's some specific, there's something else you want to convey to the council as part of your report? What do you want that to be? You know, is it enough to say, look, we've monitored, and here's the aggregate set of minutes, you know, that we have from our quarterly meetings, that it seems to be operating reasonably well. These are a set of refinements that we believe need to be made, and for your consideration, voila, we're done? Or is there some other?
Voila, we're done, I think.
Okay.
I can tell you from a staffing standpoint, any voilas, we're done, would be a good thing.
I just want to make sure we're bringing the right stuff to you in September for you to.
I think if you bring us voila, we're done, I think that'd be great.
Well, we haven't heard from Jamie Michelle. She may have some different take on some of this, but she's not here. I have no idea.
I can kick an email out to the group just to say, hey, again, hey, September, this one will be a big one because you're making a recommendation. If there's a topic you want brought up and discussed at that meeting, please give us some lead time so we can.
And then.
Prepare.
Voila.
And then voila.
Because I really, as Cynthia indicated earlier, I really do think, certainly from our office standpoint, the types of calls or complaints we get about vacation rentals is nothing. And when you look at the number of lodging rent complaints, you said there were how many?
Seven.
Over what period of time?
Like 3 months.
Three months.
Wow.
So we're talking about two complaints a month.
Yeah, coming into summer, so.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think a lot of the work that was done has resolved issues for most people. There's still people that don't like vacation rentals, you know, but we've got mechanisms to deal with real concerns that are raised here and have been trying to deal with them. So I think the other thing too is, you know, one of the big concerns when this ordinance was approved was where are we heading with the number of vacation rentals in the community? You know, because the numbers were constantly going up and going up and going up. You know, this ordinance has reduced the number of vacation rentals, and it's put a cap so that that there are limits on how many vacation rentals we can have in the community. And I think if the county had moved faster on, you know, something like this, the results of their election might have been a little different.
Yeah.
But because they were unable to act and make a decision, you know, and our decision really made both sides very angry. But they were sort of equally angry, which is usually, then you've got, you know, we found the middle ground.
Right.
And so from that standpoint, you know, I think we've got a pretty good balance in here that's never going to make everybody happy. But I think it, you know, we're preserving housing for, you know, long-term purposes. And we're still, you know, the vacation rental business has a place in, I think, in a tourism community like Newport. But I think this is a good controlled basis for how we're using it here.
What was the amount we received last year from vacation rentals? It was sizable.
Yeah, the revenue.
I don't have a number offhand.
Yeah, I don't. Did we? Can we break that down?
I don't think I can. Because I just see that in total, but it has all the hotels and everything else mixed in.
We broke it down at one point.
We did earlier in the process.
I think there's a way to do that.
I think it's like, it was almost like $3 million for the room tax, wasn't it?
I don't know if it'd be that much, but.
For hotels and everything?
Well, that's what hotels.
Oh, everything, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, everything is like $4 million.
And I put the short-term rentals in just under half a million of that kind of, I believe was where that number was in that ballpark.
Half a million?
Of the total would be attributed to the short-term rental specifically.
I've got a run, okay.
Okay, bye, Dietmar.
But that's all we had. Well, we had just one major decision. We'll wait till you leave. And
but then we can't call.
No, this was actually the last of it.
Yeah, if Dietmar's leaving, we need to adjourn because we lose our quorum. So.
Yeah.
All right. We are adjourned.